The goal, explain the 1990s in exactly 60 songs. The result, we did it. I'm Rob Arvilla. I host 60 Songs That Explain the 90s, which has indeed covered 60 fantastic songs thus far, from Tupac to Radiohead to TLC. So let's do 30 more. Let's do 90 songs. No, we're not changing the name. More rad songs, more special guests, more astute critical analysis, more loopy nostalgic exuberance. That's 60 Songs That Explain the 90s every Wednesday, only on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Musa Kwanga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am all right, thanks, man. Feels like we're on the final stretch.
We're in the end game now, as Dr. Strange said. I think he said that. Yeah, we're in the final stretch and we've got some great football to talk about going into that stretch.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. Oh my goodness. So can I say this? I've been a...
What have you done?
The Ghanaian suits are coming out. Listen,
no.
The full wardrobe. Berlin's not ready. I'm cooking them all. I'm cooking them all.
Listen, man, I'm gonna have a word with some of our Ghanaian contingent and see how they feel with a Ugandan
appropriating.
Trouble in the chat.
Tell them it's all love. Tell them it's all love.
I mean, I've seen some of them. You glimpsed some last year.
That's true. Just rolling out. It's a soft launch.
A soft launch. Oh dear. Soft launch. Moose's soft launch. Launching his summer gams.
Absolutely. Just on an Instagram story here and there. Anyway, enough. Listen.
We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well.
Indeed.
Righty's House Friday will be Flo and Mayowa. Go check Counterpress as well for all your women's football needs on The Ringer. And also, quick reminder for next week's schedule. We're doing a swap with Righty's House. You and I will be on with Ian on Monday.
Great, yeah.
We're going to be talking about the final day of the Premier League season. And then you and I will do Stadio on Tuesday. And our focus will probably be around the final day of the Bundesliga season.
Yeah, with a bit of a general sort of roundup as well, I suppose.
Yeah. A couple of bits of news that have happened since we last spoke.
Mm.
Juve have had their points deduction reinstated, but they've had it reduced to 10 points. Which, to be honest, I have thoughts about this, and I think we'll save it for the end of season wrap-up, but this is pure fuckery, and I don't like it.
Imagine doing that with your tax bill. Bartering.
Oh, yeah, man. I know. It's so messy, especially at this stage of the season, teams not really knowing what they have to do to qualify for Europe or not. But, grim.
La Liga came down with some pretty, swift sanctions against Valencia. I'm not sure necessarily severe, but they're swift.
Yeah, let's do that but quick, actually.
Yeah. A fine of €45,000 and talk of a partial ban for supporters.
Yeah, partial stadium closure for 5 matches.
Yeah.
I mean, also, there seemed to be a lot of arrests all of a sudden around people who were abusing
Vinicius
Junior.
Can I say
but
this?
Also, yeah. The people who hung the effigy of Vinicius, the Atleti fans, way back from the flyover, what we talked about, ahead of the derby. huge coincidence.
Mm. How
they seem to identify those people just a couple of days after it really kicked off.
Mm. How interesting. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying, it's just
almost
I'm not,
like
I'm not,
members,
I'm not,
almost like members of the far
anything.
Right organize in plain sight and are enabled by surrounding entities. How interesting. I mean, my goodness, what a concept.
I mean, listen, we just do a podcast. We are clearly not fine enough minds to make such a link. I'm just saying, the timing just seemed a bit odd.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But Vinicius also had his red card rescinded from Sunday's game. He didn't play.
Which is actually like kind of wild. Like it was a red card offense. Like the thing,
they
should both have got reds, right?
And I'm like, exactly.
I was like, wow, this is interesting. Like you're really, can I put this, to be frank, to put this in clearer terms, La Liga is really spooked.
Because
Puma, Valencia's sponsor, came out and condemned racism.
Mm-hmm.
Adidas came out and a bunch of different things came out. So now what's happening is La Liga is thinking, hang on a minute, if Vinicius, in the year that like Real Madrid are talking about Mbappe again, we lose one of the most bankable young stars, it's almost unprecedented for a footballer to leave an entire country because of racism.
Mm.
That would definitely spook the horses. They must be terrified because La Liga, we've seen them lose market share. We've seen how much the TV deals went up. People tune in to watch Real Madrid. And if Vinicius, a beloved footballer, the man that scored the actual winning goal in the Champions League final, that man leaves, all hell breaks loose because the precedent, what happens then? Because it's not just Vinicius, it's the players that don't want to move mm-hmm. to Spain. And here's the thing. People can talk about, oh, Vinicius, he's provocative. He provokes the crowd. Here's the thing. Iñaki Williams, who has never, to my knowledge, been accused of anything other than working his guts out, running his ass off and playing hard. That man was racially abused by Espanyol fans a while back. And that man was doing nothing but minding his business, right? So if we talk about provocative, that doesn't wash because even the players that keep their heads down are getting it. Samuel Eto'o said as long ago as 2008, he said, what are we waiting for? A black player to get killed. He said that in 2008. He said it was so racist in 2008, he stopped taking his family to games, right? And some can say like it's different now, but here's the thing, it's 15 years on, and even Samuel Eto'o did not get hate like this every week. And I know because I was watching those games, he did not get hate like this every week. This feels like some kind of a shift, right?
Mm, yeah. I think it's slightly ironic in a way that Javier Tebas in the last few years has just been doing his absolute best to get more eyes on La Liga.
Yeah.
And he's a bit like, no.
No.
Is that, you know the Star Wars meme where it's just like, God, we got more eyes on La Liga. Oh, because of a commercial deal, right? Because of a commercial deal, right?
Oh yeah, Padme and Anakin. But yeah, so look, in short, La Liga, I know we went a bit long, but in short, La Liga is spooked. They've acted swiftly. I'm not sure they've acted decisively, but it's just interesting to see what pressure can do and protest works. So shout out to Vinicius and shout out to Madrid, actually. Who would have thought, if you told me 20 years ago that I would one day be hailing Real Madrid as the guardians of all that was sacred in one aspect of football, I'd be like, no way. But on this specific issue, they've really shown up.
While we're in La Liga, let's just round up some stuff quickly. Barcelona managed to have 70% possession and lose 3-1 to Real Valladolid on Tuesday. They are well and truly
on the beach,
no fucks given territory after winning the league. Real Sociedad beat Almeria 1-0. They're in a bit of a race now. They're 5 points clear of Villarreal, who also won on Wednesday against Cadiz for the final Champions League spot. They could seal that this weekend if point against Atleti should be enough. And Real Madrid beating Rayo Vallecano at the Bernabeu 2-1. Benzema and Rodrigo with the goals late second for Real Madrid. Espanyol and Atleti served out a 6-goal thriller. And do you know what? I think Espanyol will be really annoyed here because they had so much of the... they were so much better in the first half and they went in 2-0 down. 2-0 down. And then conceded a third just after half time, but managed to fight their way back and got an equaliser like 10, 11 minutes from time. Just a shout out to Antoine Griezmann though, again, who is again absolutely incredible in this game. Low-key shout, well, not low-key shout at all. Big shout for La Liga player of the season.
Didn't we do, I don't know if this is something we discussed on the podcast, but doing a sacrificial 11.
Yeah, yeah.
Players who've basically
we literally mentioned it last episode. We said But yeah, I think Antoine
I think he's definitely, he's right in there, isn't he? So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Betis losing at home to Getafe. Mathematically, Valencia in 13th, down to Espanyol in 19th. Any of those teams could go down.
That's
which
incredible.
Is wild. Let's take a break.
Let's do it.
We'll take a break and then we'll go to Italy. All right, man. So, Simone Inzaghi and Internazionale have another Coppa in the bag. They retained the Coppa Italia after beating Fiorentina 2-1 in Rome on Wednesday night.
Everyone was in the crowd. Listen, they kept cutting. Wow.
I could not believe it. I was like,
hold me.
This camera operator is thirsty as hell.
So thirsty.
Every time it cut to the crowd, I started doing it after a while, like in my head. You know, when you add sound effects to things that you're seeing on TV, every time it cuts to someone in the crowd, like all of a sudden it was Totti, I was just like,
And Pillow. So thirsty. Vieri was there as well, wasn't he?
I know, yeah. Everyone
was
there.
It was incredible. Oh my God.
And what a game, actually. It was a really, really good game.
Listen, yeah, we need to get to that. What a match. And a really interesting game, I think, just for, in relation to the Champions League final. I thought it was just, everything about this match was incredible. Not even just the game, the atmosphere, but the tactical nuances. It was just
extremely
such
balanced,
such,
actually.
What a cup final.
It was a great cup final. Fiorentina taking a very, very early lead through Nicolas Gonzalez.
Who missed the World Cup with an injury 3 days before. Such a shame, because he's a wonderful player.
It was a really lovely move, actually, and Ikone played a really, really lovely ball across the box that I think he, because it kind of went through...
Slight deflection.
Yeah, did it go through a Serbi's legs or Damian's legs? I can't remember. I think it was
Damian, slight deflection.
Slight deflection off Damian's heel, but it was deliberately played through his legs.
What makes the pass so brilliant as well is not just the angle, well, not just that detail, but the steepness of it. It kept sort of moving away. It's such a hard thing to defend because Eva's tracking back, but the ball keeps leaving you. Yeah. It wasn't like, you know, De Bruyne likes to curve it in. It wasn't De Bruyne likes the in-swinger, but it was the same quality of pass. It was the De Bruyne quality pass. And the beautiful thing about the goal was the Inter actually started really well.
Yeah.
This was the funny thing. So it was almost like, you know, sometimes you see these matches where both teams get the possession they want, right? Like, and it's really weird. You have like a game where the possession is like, in this game, I think it was slightly Fiorentina had more possession, but you'll have a game where it's like 35-65 and that's as much possession as both teams want. It felt like that in this game where Inter were ball dominant early on and Fiorentina were like, okay, we're going to absorb that, see what you're about, then unpick you. And I think the goal was almost their first attack in a funny way. It was almost like Fiorentina were like, soaking, okay, like now we're going to punch. And the game kind of went Fiorentina's way for a bit after that in a really thrilling way. And, you know, Kone was brilliant. They looked really busy. And Amrabat did this beautiful thing where he would drop back and became a kind of centre back and everyone just pushed up.
Yeah. Like, I really, thought he played really well, Amrabat, actually.
I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, he had a good, it wasn't a great chance, but he had a good look out from outside the box at 1-0.
Yeah.
Which I think he could have got on target, but it was interesting that the one
that skimmed wide of the far post. Yeah.
It was interesting because some of the reactions that the other Fiorentina players made it feel like it was probably a better chance than it looked. I don't know if you caught that.
That's interesting because it was kind of like a grass cutter went just past what the
but it wasn't like a. I mean, we'll talk about them later, but it wasn't like any of the Luka Jovic chances.
Oh my God!
It wasn't that clear cut, but it seemed to be. He seemed to react like he should have done better, and a lot of the players looked like it was a really good chance as well.
Yeah, Jovic had a chance to make himself famous. Put it that way. We'll get to those in a moment, but yeah, Amrabat was brilliant. Bonaventura was really good. I thought Castrovilli too. The way those in particular, the way they just like shuttled forward, and the and some of the passing, some of the switches they were putting on, like this, especially the left to right switches, was just But then also like Inter, you know, credit to them because Mkhitaryan on the bench for this one,
I'm surprised to see him back actually.
Yeah, that's a big look for them because obviously like Brozovic came and stepped in for this and then Barella pushed up alongside Calhanoglu and that's great. But I think the Champions League final, you need Mkhitaryan with what he's brought to that midfield. But Inter really impressive. Some of the passing out from the back by Bastoni again was just, he is a beautiful footballer. I know a lot of people don't get a chance to watch as much Serie A as they might like, but some of his passing is next level. So get a chance to check him out if you get a moment.
Sound of the summer.
Yeah. Remember when I said Sassuolo were a team to watch and it was like, everyone knew about them for like 5 years.
Yeah,
Sassuolo are really good.
Do you know what? I think that there's a really exciting league that people should maybe think about. It's called the Zweite Bundesliga.
Have you tried strawberry Chirrets?
I like that though. You take your time and you come to things when you want to come to them. I like that.
Yeah, like 10, 12 years late. But we'll say this, we haven't mentioned one player who really becomes important later. Lautaro Martinez.
Wow.
His first touch in this game, he gets the ball and does this beautiful move where he like does 3-4 touches, turn, lay off, bang. And I'm like, this man is locked in. He looked, you know that kind of Alexis Sanchez intensity?
Yeah.
Where he gets the ball and all of a sudden, everything's like 30% more intense. He was like that from the beginning. He was absolutely locked in. He was on it. Even when his teammates weren't quite matching what Fiorentina was doing, even to the point where a couple of times they weren't quite on his wavelength, they weren't quite seeing what he was seeing, he came in and he raised it. And there was this element of, you know, sometimes you see a player where you're like, that guy's not going to let this team lose.
He had a really, really interesting game. 2 shots, 2 goals, created 3 chances. Right. And just...
He has been on one ever since.
He has actually. Well,
before and after the World Cup, especially after, he has been on one.
It's interesting because I think when it started to look like... There's something about this Inter side that they can... Because they've been quite disappointing this season. Remember, we talked about this after the Champions League semi-final, that Inzaghi was going to get fired. And basically since that thing came out, or it became known that he was basically one game away from being fired, they've kind of been on a tear. But there's something about this Inter side, and they've had it from the Conte days, the last couple of years. I know they've had maybe in the league a couple of disappointing seasons overall, but the cups are way different. And Nicky Bandini wrote a tweet saying, Simone Inzaghi has won every edition of every available domestic cup competition since arriving at Inter. Supercoppa 2021, Coppa Italia 2022, Supercoppa 2022, Coppa Italia 2023. And there's a thing that seems to shift in them when they start getting a sniff. It's almost like the shark. It's like the shark in the water, basically. Just minding their own business, maybe being a little bit. And as soon as there's a hint of blood in there, they're like, we can actually go for this.
They seem to switch it on.
We'll talk about it later because I want to talk about the second half of the second half of the first half, and then I want to talk about Lukaku a little bit later. I thought Lukaku was really, really good in this game, and this was a really good example of something that City have to be wary of in the final.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But lost my train of thought.
You know, sorry, I was rude. So let's just to park that. You said there's a switch and then they smell it.
There's a switch and they switched in this game, I think. You could see that the opening period, it looked like, because Fiorentina kind of bopped them on the nose pretty early.
Yeah.
And Inter looked a little bit, not shook, but a bit like, oh, okay. And then the second half of that first half, they clicked into a gear where they could have had a third, actually, and Fiorentina could have been out of sight at half. Fiorentina could have been done by half time. But Martinez just switches into gear, and there's an intensity that kind of clicks in. Their first one, for example, is a really... I'm not sure who it is at the back. I think it might have been Quarta, who kind of slips a little bit as the ball goes through. And Martinez has that little bit of space, drives into the bottom corner. It's 1-1. But the second goal,
that pass,
they got
ball watching for the first goal, I think.
Yeah,
yeah.
But then the second one, cross comes in,
Barella.
Martinez volley, unbelievable. And it's like Fiorentina couldn't hang with them for a period, and they managed to hang with them for quite a lot of the game. And the period that they couldn't hang with them, Inter capitalized massively. And I do think that's something that Man City have to be wary of. You cannot let Inter the space, have the space or the to get into a game, because they will hurt you.
Well, I love that you've said this and mentioned the Champions League in that context, because Simone's prowess in cup finals makes him, and Pep will be aware of this, it makes him the most dangerous opponent that Pep could have had at this stage, funnily enough. More dangerous than a Milan or a Napoli, because coaching a final is a very specific thing. You know, you coach a final in stages, you absorb pressure, you go for the jugular, maybe in the middle third, and then you bring on someone like Lukaku later on when the field is stretched to keep everyone pinned. And then Lukaku is a nightmare because he's pressing you all over the pitch. He's pressing on the wings, through the centre. You know, I'm not saying Inter are going to win this Champions League final. I'm saying that they will rightly, City, be extremely wary of him in this setting. Mm. You're right, this ability to raise the game, you know, we see in finals, so often finals are decided in a few minutes, and they were ultimately decided by those two Martinez goals. Some might criticize the marking for the goal that he scores, the volley, but it was only because he was pulling them all over the place.
Yeah.
And you cannot track someone that good and that intense all the time. You're going to lose them at some point. You're going to lose them. And Barella's pass was so clever because it's the waist high. It's such a clever cross. You don't often see those kind of chipped crosses into the box like waist high. It was almost like
swinger as well.
Yeah, it was like he was teeing up the layup for the dunk, you know? It was like teeing
it's
up.
It's almost like in cricket where you tease the batsman outside off stump to have a little wiggle at it. And you know, you want to, and that was kind of what it looks like. It's one of those because it looks like the defender, you want to tease the defender almost into go into it because it's out swinging. They just can't get it.
Absolutely.
Because it's a bit different when you go head high and the defender can kind of make a run at it.
But this was always rather like Kone, weirdly enough, rather like Kone's cross the box, where it's always kind of going away from you.
Mm.
So yeah, that was a decided, well, so it was 2-1 at half time. And then the second half is interesting too, because Fiorentina kind of come back into it.
I tell you what, the second half was goalless, but I thought more fun.
It's weird because I thought on the balance of the game, I thought overall, like in terms of minutes of domination, Fiorentina was superior for more of the game, in my opinion. I felt they were superior for more of the game, but the bits where Inter had to feed, Inter fully fed, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think the last 20 minutes or so of the game was just, for a neutral, it must have been torture for any Inter or Fiorentina fans.
My goodness, yeah.
But it was so fun to watch because it just went end to end to end. And there were two huge chances for Luka Jovic. One where he does an unbelievable
turn. The footwork is unbelievable.
It's so good. Like, it's so good. And he's basically, like, you know, one of those goals that we talked about this on Stadio. There's a moment where this is going to be a goal. You just see everything just fall out, like roll out in front of you, and you're like, this is going to be a goal. And this had it. And then when Handanovic makes that save, you're like, oh, wow. And it's one of those where I have a thing about this game. Handanovic played really well and made some really good saves, but you absolutely saw why Onana has to be in goal for the Champions League final at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was this level of chaos that I feel being out of the side has crept back into Handanovic's game. But he went walkies a couple of times in the last 20 minutes on crosses. And I was like, yeah, he's made some really good saves in this game because he made another one, I think, from Jovic, I think. Maybe one from Artur Cabral. And then, but on the second Jovic chance, which was the header into the far post, Handanovic is all over the place. And there's another one later on where he comes out for a cross, jumps, misses it. And I think they clear it off the line.
Yeah, well, actually, we'll get to the second, the Jovic header, because that was, it was painful for him in so many ways. But the Handanovic save was a bit like, it's like when a rapper hasn't released a record for like 4 or 5 years, never thinks they've fallen off. And it was almost like, that save was almost like, you forgot who I was. You forgot what I could do. Because it's such a, it was the decisive moment in the second half.
Mm.
Because the touch, with the turn, the change of direction to throw off basically two defenders with one move that Jovic does is mind-blowing. And by then, all odds are on him scoring. The save is so good. But the Jovic miss, if you could basically encapsulate Jovic's career since leaving Eintracht Frankfurt, it would be the save from Handanovic and the header wide. It just has not fallen for him. And that's partly, you know, circumstances. And it's partly his own his own failure to be truly decisive in those moments. And that header wide, you see it again, you watch it the first time you see it, like, how has he put that wide? And you see it again and again, and you're like, there's really no excuse for a player of his talent to put that wide. And I'm not even sure if he could make excuses for himself, just because it was so important. 2-2 at that point, and Fiorentina playing the way they were, and just Inter really struggling to get out for large periods, and they saw out the game relieved in the end.
But there was a period where when massive Jovic chance, and then Lukaku had one at the other end, or there was a really good moment actually where Lukaku gets the ball down the right hand side.
Yes, it was the right. This is the problem. Does this, the favoured foot. Yeah,
and does this step over, but then cuts it back. Actually, it's amazing. And Robin Gosens is coming in at the back post and kind of goes with his right foot. I think he goes with his left, maybe. And the defender gets to it, and basically, I think it's a corner. But that was a really, really good chance. Lukaku, when he came on, looks like he has that extra half a yard of sharpness back.
Yes, he's absolutely locked in. Even when the second goal was scored, and you saw him on the touchline, really close to the touchline, into it.
He is involved. You know what this reminds me? Inter at the moment with this, and Lukaku mentioned it. We talked about it after the Champions League semi-final, how Inzaghi's installed this kind of rotational thing with. And they do you know what they remind me of? They remind me of like a deep NBA playoffs team.
Oh, I love that you mentioned. He's like a sixth man, Lukaku, isn't he?
Yeah,
I love that you've mentioned this. Do you know why? Lukaku's already had the talk. The talk being, you might get 20 minutes in the Champions League final. Get ready to use it. It won't be a 90, but you might get half an hour. You might get 20, but when that comes,
that is not a substitution that you want to be throwing on against you in the latter stages of a final. You just don't.
Absolutely, they've got a scheme for it. They will have been thinking about what that looks like, because that flank, you'll have Ake and Grealish there, and they will not fancy that. And this is what's so interesting about this tie, this matchup. We arguably haven't seen an Italian team with this much of a chip on their shoulders since the last Inter Milan that got to a Champions League final in 2010. Mm. Arguably not. In terms of them having points to prove, being underrated, disrespected for different reasons. Lautaro came off that World Cup, which he was not happy with. Dzeko being perennially underrated, even though he's respected across the league. Lukaku with a lot to prove. Mkhitaryan finally finding his home at Inter. Calhanoglu, like all these players in the mix. Calhanoglu, who went from Milan to Inter and is still hated for that. There's a lot of needle in this Inter team.
Yeah.
And I think the only reason I still think City can and should win.
Yeah, same.
Probably will, just because I think that the only reason, if City do win, it will be because Pep didn't take Inter for granted, which other managers would. And again, you're right, Pep doesn't get credit. And often, like when Pep does these the big changes and everyone laughs, it's actually because he takes other teams so seriously. If I give Pep credit for anything, those big changes that he makes, they come about because he had it with the Champions League final with Timo Werner. Timo Werner was causing so much trouble for Chelsea that he reconfigured everything. It's a really, I'm really forward to the final and the clash of styles. And looking at Fiorentina, if you look at Fiorentina, I mean, it's a bit reductive to say this, but I'll say it anyway. Fiorentina are kind of, they have like a Man City type energy, but they don't have the players to execute at the same level. But in terms of their progressive football, I mean, having Amrabat as a centre back and everyone pushing up is such a Pep thing. It's such a classic, you go and play, I'll hold the fort, I'll switch and everything. So actually, I mean, Rodri's done that a ton of times for Spain and even to an extent for City. So it was almost like this was the perfect dress rehearsal as a final for what City will throw at them. In summary, super excited.
Yeah, I think just wrapping up from this, I think Inter thoroughly deserved it overall. Yeah. It was a really, really good game of football. Fiorentina, it's going to be interesting to see how they perform against West Ham.
If they can push into this close, they're a team that's good enough to go and take that trophy. I know West Ham had a tough year, so this is a great time for West Ham to kind of not redeem their season, but get something out of it. Redeem's a bit of a strong word, but get something out of it. But Fiorentina, certainly the football they played for large stretches of that final.
Oh, if they play some of the football they played in that final against West Ham, they'll get joy. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Congrats Inter. And they go into the Champions League final, I think, full of confidence. And props to Simone Inzaghi.
Looking forward to that final.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's take a break and then we'll go to the Premier League.
Let's do it.
One game in the Premier League last night, we want to talk about it because it featured one of my favorite goals of the season. Brighton won, Manchester City won. Would you like to hear some stats?
Yes, please. Oh my God. Yeah, this is, yeah. Okay.
So Brighton, this is from Opta. Brighton accumulated 2.4 expected goals versus Manchester City. That's the highest XG total Manchester City have conceded in a single game this entire season. Check out this one. Brighton fired in 20 shots against Manchester City. Only Wolves, 21 in December 2019, and Atletico Madrid, 22 versus Barcelona in March 2009, have attempted more shots in a top flight match against a side managed by Pep Guardiola.
So disrespectful. I told you, the most disrespectful team in the Premier League. So disrespectful. Pep loved coaching this game. He loved it. Put it this way, he even loved, you know what? Even the yellow card that he got, that was an existential yellow because he was enjoying feeling something. Question the decision. I mean, Haaland got the gold as well, but rewind. Back to the start of the game. Pep loved coaching this game because Brighton came out and were going after it. Yep. Knowing a point would get them Europa League qualification, which they secured, which is a wonderful achievement.
We have to, yeah. We're going to talk about that.
We'll get into that. So the lead is taken by Man City. Haaland gets put through by Mahrez. Beautiful curving pass out to the flank. Haaland cuts in, cuts it back for Foden, who places it in. And actually, I think they could have a bit better with this. Brighton could have got it clear. But anyway, so it's 1-0. But then Brighton kind of go into overdrive.
The goal, man.
Brighton go into overdrive. So there's a couple of things. Before the goal gets scored, Welbeck is looking absolutely locked in. Matoma is fearless as ever.
And well, they hit the bar from that free kick.
They're looking so sharp in and around the box. And then they get the disallowed goal, right? The disallowed goal. Matoma scrambles over the line, but it's a clear handball. Now, here's the funny thing, which is an important detail. This is about half an hour. And there's arguing with the ref. Oh, ref wasn't a handball. Who is the person clutching the ball, arguing with the ref? It's Enciso. And it's almost as if he's thinking, oh, really? You disallowed that? Let's give you something you can't disallow. Ryan, please explain. Explain what happens next.
just one of the best goals of the season. In fact, I genuinely think this isn't a shout for Premier League goal of the season. And I know that might sound a little bit like recency bias, but Jason Steele has the ball and he essentially just waits, puts his arms out, rolls his foot over the ball, dribbles, like takes it to the end of the box, edge of the box. This is what, 10? Maybe 12 seconds now, puts his foot on the ball, he has Haaland and De Bruyne either side of him, and he's almost egging them to come to him. I think De Bruyne takes one step, plays it into midfield, all of a sudden, three passes later, Brighton are in Manchester City's left back position. They keep the ball, they go all the way back, then the ball's with the centre backs, they come out again, and the ball goes back to Steele. This is, what, 20 odd seconds later?
Unreal.
30 seconds later, maybe 30. Yeah, they've had the ball now for about 40 seconds from Steele. Again, De Bruyne's coming. Two of the three closest players to him, Man City players, he waits, pings a ball out to the left back, Brighton are out again. And Manchester City are running towards their own box. Plays into midfield to Enciso, cuts inside, takes a step top right corner from 25, 30 yards out. It is one of the most unbelievable goals in terms of just...
the craft of it.
It is so good, right? And if you, the thing that I love about this goal is that it's a real, and I don't want to be mean, and I don't want to take aim at hashtag proper football men, but this is a straight fuck you to anyone who hates on data, hates on modern football management, hates on modern football terminology. The whole, I saw a tweet, forgive me who it was, but someone actually quote tweeted that video, said, you know, the whole like swallowed a laptop thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, this is what happens. Like, this guy didn't know the league, Musa. What does he know about the Premier League?
Yeah, doesn't know the league.
Do you know what? He knew things about the Premier League that the Premier League didn't even know about itself yet. That's how good Roberto De Zerbi is.
Dude, the players, the best press in the Premier League, were chasing the ball like cats going after a laser pointer. Honestly. It was really just absolutely, they just couldn't. The man was playing angles up and the way the goal arrives, incredibly the way the goal arrives, it's a crescendo. It's the build, isn't it? It's the build to all of that. Like, and then, and also the way he struck it, like some will be like, oh, it was Ortega. Look, No one is saving that. No one is. The way he strikes that, it's such a strange, even the trajectory of it, the best view is from behind. And he hits it so clean, and it's almost like it just, it curves in, and it, I don't know, it had the accuracy of like a Toni Kroos, but it had the power of like a Tony Yeboah. It was, I've the strike, and he's not a big dude, so it's all technique. You know when you see these like really, really skinny golfers just like thwack it 350 yards?
Yeah, this goal was Matt Fitzpatrick. Do you know what? Actually, Brighton, if Brighton were a golfer, they'd be Matt Fitzpatrick.
Matt Fitzpatrick.
Young, they're perfect. Exciting, they're going to win a load, they love data. Like, Matt Fitzpatrick has kept a note of every single shot he's ever hit since he was 16. Like, seriously, he's got piles and piles of notebooks, and just everybody loves him.
This is a perfect analogy. It's a perfect... And the way they played in this game...
Hashtag golf.
Without fear, I mean, this is a bit of a hot take, but... Maybe this is almost the trailer for the next stage of what Brighton go on and do. Because they're in transition. They're going to lose players in the summer. But you see Nciso emerging. This man has scored two spectacular strikes against Chelsea and now against Man City. And, you know, those are games where I know Chelsea aren't what they were. They're struggling a bit. But that is still a game with a lot of eyes on it. Mm-hmm. And in two of the games, which internationally would have some of the biggest audiences, Nciso has come through with absolute bangers. This man is absolutely, this man is child, this boy is fearless.
Listen to this though. Do you know why I think this is this era or this this era of Brighton feels different to previous ones? I know it's really easy to say stuff like that, but there's something about this Brighton that is, they've got a bit more of an edge to them than they did under Potter. Under Potter, they felt very much kind of like, aren't this Brighton really good? Aren't they really nice? Isn't Graham Potter a really nice guy as a coach? Oh, what an amazing job he's done. Oh, isn't it great that they're doing really well and beating teams or playing this really interesting football? De Zerbi is what rocked up. Listen, no guy who rocks up to a Premier League, his first Premier League job with a beard like that is going to fuck around.
No.
Sorry.
Not at all.
De Zerbi rocks up and he's just like... No one's going to patronise you ever again. That's what I imagine this, in my Brighton fan fiction from this season, I imagine that De Zerbi's rocked up and he's just like, they think you're nice, you play good stuff, but they patronise you. We're gonna go out there and we're going to teach these guys who's fucking boss. And I love it. It's like...
You can feel it.
I love this. I love the energy change at Brighton this season. Brighton have always been progressive. They've been incredible in recruitment. They're an incredibly well-run club. They're brilliant. They're kind of like, we've talked about Brighton before. They've had their props. Something has shifted with the De Zerbi appointment.
It has.
And it might go, and they might finish ninth in the league next season. But you know what? Even if they do, that was probably going to be because Chelsea, Spurs, Liverpool, all of these other teams have fixed up. Mm. And also...
And frankly should.
Do you know what now?
Too, if we'd be honest.
The Premier League is shifting to an era where you might finish 12th one season and finish 8th the next, and actually that's not really, and vice versa, and it's actually not really that bad because the league is going to be that competitive. We've seen how good Villa have been. We've seen how good Fulham have been this year. We've seen how good various other teams have been.
We've seen how outstanding coaching can close gaps. It will never dwarf, but in an individual game, I mean, over the course of a 38-game season, it's squads, it's injuries, but over the course of an individual game, and this is why you see the embrace that Pep gave to De Zerbi at the end.
He knows.
Yeah, you know what else he knows? City, board are not stupid. Planning successors, that man's on a shortlist. It's not even, that man's on a shortlist. Like, if De Zerbi as a successor, and I would, you know, that's a frightening prospect, to be honest.
Wow.
But that man can coach anywhere in the world, toe-to-toe with any manager, any squad, and just play them into ribbons because City put out a strong side. And they were cats chasing a laser pointer for a lot of it. That's what Brighton do to you. They draw you in. They tempt you into spaces and you know, you get told prior to the game, oh, they'll do this, they'll do that. It was one thing being told about it. Mm-hmm. And I've said this before, it's one thing being told, oh yeah, by the way, cross the motorway, like, holding a pot of water in your head. Oh yeah,
Brighton are basically the footballing tenor.
They are. Just like,
but put it this way: like getting hammered at home in that weird game with Everton. You know, five shots, five goals. Weird game. Newcastle were good against them.
Yeah,
and they handled it. You know, they handled stuff they handled business. Newcastle were probably, I think, out of a lot of teams that have played against them this season, that Newcastle performance at St James's Park was one of the best ways to, the best that I've seen a side play Brighton this season. Then you saw what they did to Arsenal. You know, this game, this stage of the season also throws up weird results, right?
Yeah.
But I think this Brighton side are a very high risk, high reward, and the rewards vastly outweigh.
It's a bit like Bielsa's Leeds, only a more evolved version.
Yeah.
Because Bielsa's Leeds, there was the exhaustion, and there was the problem with Bielsa's Leeds was the tempo switch was a real problem. But this team has a much better hold on tempo. And again, I've said this before, but agents all over the world desperate to get their players into this club. Because of the style of football they play and of the shop window they provide. So, yeah.
And they are into the Europa League.
That is, I mean.
Apparently they played it a full time, which I think is the most, one of the most stadio things that's ever happened in professional football.
That is incredible. I didn't know
that. You know, the only thing that would have been better is if they'd actually played a recording of us singing the Europa League song.
Well, can I say this actually, and I won't get any fans for saying this. Obviously, as an event, a Manchester Derby FA Cup final is the thing. As a football spectacle, Brighton, Manchester City, as a footballing spectacle in the FA Cup final, would have been something I would have been extremely intrigued by as a footballing spectacle, because the game itself, I think the styles on a stage like that, with Brighton going for a trophy like that, I think could have been really special. Maybe we'll see that next year, the way they're playing.
It wouldn't surprise me if we saw Brighton win a trophy under De Zerbi.
I want to see what kind of player they attract in the summer. I'm not saying it's going to be a big money buy, because I don't think they're going to move into that era, but I'd be really interested to see who arrives, because I think they might lose one or two.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I'm good. No? I'm good. Yeah.
Manchester United, Chelsea tonight.
Yes, indeed.
But if Manchester United secures Champions League, do you think Chelsea could land one last blow?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. You see the news about Todd Boehly stepping back from involvement, a little bit of involvement at Chelsea, and just, it's interesting, isn't it? It is funny, because he's been criticised a lot, and he's been criticised a lot for being stubborn. But like, certain things, something's cut through with him, to the point where he's like, actually, maybe too much involvement is a distraction. I don't think that's the worst decision for him or for Chelsea. I think you've got a very good squad of players. You said this so many times. You've got a very good squad of players there. Summer's on its way. Give them a full preseason of training with a settled squad and a settled manager, and then just go from there. I saw that and I thought, you know, that's actually one of the smarter choices in recent months. Summer holidays ahead, and I look forward to seeing what they get out of their preseason, because again, like the way Nkunku's playing, Chelsea fans be very excited, because that man is,
he's
cooking. He is cooking.
I mean, you mentioned Nkunku there. Let's do a little bit of German news quick. The DFL clubs, so the Bundesliga and Zweite Bundesliga clubs,
yes,
had a vote on private investors coming into the DFL.
Whether to give private equity a stake in future TV rights.
Yeah, and also sponsorship within, I think, the league and stuff like that. It didn't receive the necessary two-thirds majority. There was 20 yes, 11 no's, and 5 abstentions. So therefore, no investor. It was a bit of a weird split. Some from the Bundesliga voted no. I think Stuttgart voted no. I think Augsburg voted no, and Köln voted no. There were some votes for it in the second tier. It's an interesting thing though, because it again shows that why German football is
Derek
Gray different.
Did you see the Derek Gray tweet about this?
Yes,
the commentator. Yeah, Derek Gray made a great point. He said, look, there are problems in German football, like obviously it's got flaws. He said, at the same time, seeking consensus on an issue like this is something that just wouldn't happen in the English game. They would just sort of go ahead and fans would have to take it. And just that sense of engagement, of putting it out to people, you need that sense of ownership, I think. And you know, we'll see how the Bundesliga shakes out. We'll see who wins the league. You know, Dortmund could still take it, should still take it. They should take
it's
it.
In their hands.
It is in their hands, but we've seen that before. But all the same, regardless of the outcome, you feel like ultimately the German Football League is in isn't reasonably good. Well, isn't better hands than a lot of other leagues are, just by virtue of that consultation process. Which I
and as a product,
yeah,
it's just a product, yeah. You know, a lot of those clubs knew how unpopular it was among fans. There have been protests and banners in stadiums for ages about this. And I think they don't. They knew that if they,
oh my God, all hell would have broken loose. Can you imagine?
I reckon that's it.
Yeah.
Have you got any plans for the upcoming mini retirement?
For those who aren't aware, an esteemed former footballer referred to a weekend break as a mini retirement. Which
people have had their fun with that this week, but honestly,
I did laugh.
Some of these kind of these elite mindset. Yeah. Podcast kind of vibes. They just come up with some stuff that's like, dude, that's a whole, you're just taking a weekend break. It's a weekend. Like the guy even on the podcast even says, that's a weekend.
Can I say like all these kind of motivational speakers, does it not get exhausting being consumed by a constant desire for greatness? Is there not room in your schedules for like a mug of cocoa and
you know how recently The Weeknd changed his name on social media to his birth name? I would be amazed if The Weeknd changed his name to mini retirement.
Drop an EP.
All right, everyone, don't forget to check Counterpress, check Righty's House on Friday, check the Stadio Ultras players on Spotify. We would have loved to have played out on an old Tina Turner tune today, but unfortunately we couldn't have anything cleared, but rest in peace, Tina.
Yes, absolutely. I'm just so happy that she got to just live her best life in the end. You know, what she went through at the start. I just love that she found love, found comfort, found peace, living on Lake Zurich. I mean, if anyone, if I wish that for anyone, I wish it for Tina Turner.
A song we picked to play out on, kind of a bit of a tribute, but not by Tina, by Evelyn Braden, and a track called "That's What Soul Is."
Ah, beautiful.
So we're going to play on this. Don't forget to check the whole Stadio Ultras playlist on Spotify. And anything you want to add, Musa Okwonga?
Nothing further.
All right, everyone, have a lovely mini retirement, and we'll be back with you on Monday.
See you then.